This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. Cellular health is the foundation of wellness. True Niagen Pro helps cells stay resilient. True Niagen Pro is a unique form of vitamin B3 clinically proven to safely increase NAD, a vital resource used to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. But this critical cellular resource is not constant. It's been found to decline up to 50% as we age. When NAD levels are low, our cells have a harder time producing the energy they need to maintain our health as we age. Published research shows that increasing NAD boosts cellular energy production, supports healthy cellular metabolism, and promotes cellular repair. When surveyed, True Niagen users report improvements in energy levels and an enhanced sense of overall well-being. True Niagen Pro is backed by multiple published clinical studies and is only available through healthcare practitioners. You can get yours by going to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com for True Niagen Pro. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And once again, it's time to answer your questions. Your questions can come to us in three ways. You can call us during our regular radio program, or you can email us your question, as you're about to hear some answers to right now. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions. Another way to get questions to us is to go to our website at drhoffman.com. And on your PC or Mac, there is a little rectangular box, which you can click on. You'll be invited to record a question, and those are the questions that go on our weekly podcast, our weekly radio program, our live radio program. Before we get to questions, how are you doing, Layla?
All right, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Good, good. I'm looking here at a study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, Effects of Red Meat, White Meat, and Non-Meat Protein Sources on Atherogenic Lipoprotein Measures in the Context of Low Compared with High Saturated Fat Intake, a Randomized Controlled Trial. What's it all about? Let's generate a lot of headlines. And the headline is basically that chicken is just as bad as red meat.
Ah, okay. For all you poultry eaters out there, beware.
Well, okay, so the problem here is this is predicated on the idea that red meat is bad.
Yes.
And that if red meat is bad, then chicken is just as bad. Mm. But the problem is that what they're looking at is, I looked at the article, and the article doesn't say eating chicken kills you just as much as eating red meat.
Okay? Right, yes.
Because really is the major concern. Because,
yeah.
You know, let's say, you know, it was, you know, 1860, and we hadn't discovered a way of doing venipuncture and lab tests to measure this thing, which I don't know if anybody knew the name of. Maybe a couple of research scientists knew about it in 1860, called cholesterol, this thing called cholesterol. So cholesterol got a big buildup, turned into a big villain, and we now equate it with cardiovascular risk.
Yeah.
So what they're saying in this article is quite simply that if you eat chicken, it's going to somewhat raise your HDL just as much as if you eat red meat. And if you eat plant protein,
But HDL is a good cholesterol.
I'm sorry,
we want the HDL.
Say HDL?
Yes.
I misspoke. It'll raise your total cholesterol and in particular your so-called bad cholesterol, your LDL.
Yeah.
So if the goal of life is to keep your cholesterol as low as possible, if we accept that premise,
then dementia will ensue.
Right, right. But we shouldn't eat any chicken or any red meat.
Yeah.
And that would be, you know, you've demonstrated a principle of longevity. But actually, it is true that vegetarians have less cardiovascular disease than omnivores.
Yes.
Because omnivores tend to be, you know, a little sloppier than vegetarians in a lot of aspects of life.
That's
true. They tend to eat a lot of junk. And, you know, when you're eating meat, who's to say that you're not having, you know, an Egg McMuffin with bacon
you know, for breakfast at Burger King or, you know, wherever they make that.
Yeah, or deep fried chicken or a kind of McNugget kind of thing.
I guess, you know, there has to be some qualification for that, you know, in terms of what are the accoutrements of an omnivorous diet, meaning you're eating everything indiscriminately.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're vegetarian, a little bit generally more selective, unless you're total junk food vegetarian. I don't know that many
That's
of those
true.
People. There are some people who eat
the pizza and French fries vegetarians.
Yeah.
The soy crisps.
So I think that this article is based on a bit of a false premise.
Yeah.
Which is that it's better to keep your LDL low with a dietary approach. And it's also the premise that underlies the widespread prescribing of statins, which admittedly are helpful for people with cardiovascular trouble.
Yes.
There are some studies that, you know, if you had a heart attack, if you had a stent, maybe if you've had a stroke, you will benefit from a statin.
Yeah.
But there's not a really strong body of evidence on what's called primary prevention, is to get your LDL down. You recall very well our patient who came to us in the early 2000s. She had a cholesterol of 320. I said, that's a concern.
Yeah.
We can't just dismiss it. She didn't even have that great in HDL. I think her HDL was like, you know, high 50s or 60.
Hmm.
I said, you know, when your LDL is 220-something, you know, you got to watch out. So we did an EBT heart scan. She had zero plaque.
There you go.
So she comes back 2018, last year, and we do, you know, I said, you know, it's been like 10 years now.
Yeah.
We need to make sure that in that 10 years, your cholesterol is even higher now. It's 340.
Oh, my.
And so we did another one.
Mm-hmm.
It's still zero.
There you go.
So it's, again,
it's not all about the cholesterol,
people.
It's not
the end all and the be all and end all of risk.
You know, I wish scientists, researchers would also preface the function of cholesterol. The liver makes 80% of the cholesterol that we need. Why?
Right.
Because our bodies need it.
Yeah. It's a precursor to all our steroid hormones.
Really? Yeah. I mean, really, we have to discuss, or what needs to be discussed before even the research is done, is the action of cholesterol and what it does.
Well, it's an interesting article, which I think got a lot of attention. I did mention on one of my radio programs. And it has to do with the effect of drastic lipid lowering on diabetics. So, of course, if you're diabetic, automatically you must be on a statin, because that's thought to be a high risk for cardiovascular disease. So once you have a diagnosis of diabetes, either type 1 or type 2, everyone gets a statin automatically, regardless of their cholesterol.
Right.
So, and they now have drugs that, you know, statins lower cholesterol, maybe 30-40% at most.
Yeah.
With a very high dose statin. You know, they'll take a cholesterol of 240 and turn it down to 180 or something. But they have drugs now that will lower cholesterol to double digits. So
That's frightening.
So you can lower cholesterol to 60 or 70 or 80. Total cholesterol, not LDL. These are called PCSK9 inhibitors.
Oh, the
They're injectable meds. Yeah, and they're the latest, greatest cholesterol lowers. But what they said in this article was that in diabetics who have peripheral neuropathy, they have nerve damage due to the diabetes, that by starving the nerves of cholesterol, that you heighten the risk for neuropathy in diabetics.
Yeah.
So that's your nerves. What you just said.
Think
was the
myelin
brain.
Sheath.
Think of your brain too,
because your brain.
You know, one big hunk of nerves.
Right.
You know, so
the master and commander of all that.
So concern about, you know, ultra. You know, again, people say, well, Dr. Hoffman, you prescribe statins, and I do. I mean, there are some cases where it's
but not indiscriminate. I mean, yeah, medical management is appropriate.
What kind of holistic doctor are you? You know, you prescribe drugs. Well, I am.
When it's necessary,
holistic in a more, I think in the true sense of the word.
Yeah, yeah.
So there we have it. All right. So I'm going to probably talk a little more about this study on one of my programs because it's generating a lot of confusion.
Right. And I think this is falling in line with the trend or what's in vogue lately to move everybody towards plant-based diet.
It's the Lancet trial.
Yeah.
It's also the Beyond Burger, whatever it's called now.
Beyond Burger.
Right. It's that plant-based burger.
Yes.
That's designed to save the planet, but also, be super beneficial for you. And it's full of you know, soy, and it's full of
artificial
ingredients, and, you know.
Let's get all, yeah, okay, all of that.
But it bleeds. It has, like, you know.
Like red, yes, so it could, you could, it could look like a medium rare burger or something, right. Oh, boy, like tofurkey.
I want to try one, but if I buy one, I'll probably take a couple bites and throw the rest away.
Because
I would get, like, a real case of indigestion from it, probably.
Probably, if it's got those kind of ingredients.
I've read some reviews, and people say it's amazing. It really sort of tastes like a burger, but, like, afterwards, I really didn't feel good.
Well, you know, food science is a wonderful thing. They can make fake butter taste better than real butter. It is amazing what they do, but it doesn't mean you should have it.
Right. It enters the mouth and triggers the senses in a way similar to real food.
Yeah.
But the body doesn't accept it like real food.
Right. The liver says, what?
What? What is this?
What is this?
Right.
Like non-dairy creamer. What is this?
What?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Should we get on to questions?
Let's do it.
Okay. We have an email from Steve. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, of your patients who have had an infected tooth, how many have been able to save the tooth through holistic means? And how do they do it? How many had to have the tooth extracted?
Well, you know, first of all, you know, I will say that when a tooth is infected, it's got so many crevices and cavities and, you know, tiny air pockets within it that it is dangerous, to the systemically.
Yes,
know,
because that bacteria travels.
The bacteria travels, but also it secretes toxins that may permeate your body. So what's interesting is, you know, I keep coming back to the story, is my grandfather, you know, he used to babysit me when I was a kid. My parents would have a date night and I'd stay with grandpa. He was divorced from grandma, so he was always staying with one or another. And, you know, grandpa would, before he turned out the lights, he would drop his dentures in a glass of, you know, like a glass of water.
Yeah.
And I don't know, he threw some Polident in there or something
right.
like that.
Yeah.
And he, you know, then I would see him and he would look like, you know.
Like this.
Yeah. He looked like a hillbilly, you know, basically.
Yeah.
But he was a wealthy man. Mm-hmm. And in that era, good dentistry meant that they would pull your teeth.
Yeah.
They weren't about restoration. They would like, let's get
rid of it. Teeth are bad. They have to go.
Right. So he had, you know, good quality dentures, as good as there could be. And he lived to be 101. He probably didn't have any teeth beyond the age of 50, I think.
Wow.
You know, because
I
was pretty young. I remember that he did it. So the point being, what we can do with sometimes a tooth that's infected is we'll clean it out and we'll do a restoration, a root canal, sort of clean out the pulp in the tooth and administer antibiotics, antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to correct me. and then, then we have what I call faulty towers after the British.
That was a good Britcom, yeah.
TV, you know, sitcom of the whatever, 1980s. And you remember with John Cleese and, that crew.
Uh-huh.
So we have teeth that are potentially still infected, but they're denervated.
Yeah.
And they you can't experience pain with them, so you don't know that they're problematic.
Mm-hmm.
So coming back to this question.
Yeah.
The answer, I think, is really no, because antibiotics don't penetrate tooth material.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little like a bone infection. Osteomyelitis is one of the most difficult infections to eradicate with antibiotics. You have to take intravenous antibiotics for 6 weeks. It goes very deep into the tissue.
Wow.
And very hard to get the smoldering embers of infections out. So it's best to have the tooth taken out. Now, there is this technique of biological dentistry with ozone. Ozone is a purifying compound and
used back in the good old days intravenously.
So I invite any holistic dentists who are listening, and there must be some out there who can tell us what they think on this subject. You know, please weigh in with a question, with a comment.
Mm-hmm.
radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll credit you if you wish, or if you want to remain anonymous, let us know with an opinion on this question. But I would be in favor of, you know, if thine tooth offends thee, pluck it out.
Yeah.
Paraphrasing the Bible.
Oh, my, yeah, yeah.
If thine tooth offendeth thee,
Then pluck it out.
Then plucketh it out.
Plucketh it out. Okay.
Right.
So, Steve, thank you for that question. Wow. Yeah.
And I have no experience of anybody, you know.
Yeah. I can't think of anyone of our patients who have had this happen. I know that we've had patients with an infective tooth. They had antibiotic therapy if they had an abscess or some other.
A little segue on this is they just came out with a study that says that 81% of the antibiotic prescriptions that were rendered by dentists are unnecessary.
Huh.
Because
don't tell me they're still giving it out for mitral valve prolapse.
Well, that got changed.
Yeah.
It, you know, anybody with a heart murmur.
But did they not get the memo or something?
it used to be anybody with a heart murmur, you had to have antibiotics because you could get this dread condition of endocarditis. So like you know, they would ask you, do you have a heart murmur? Boom, you're on antibiotics. For anything, for tooth cleaning, for cleaning.
Yeah.
Well, theoretically, you can seed bacteria into the bloodstream from any kind of instrumentation.
It's not just a cleaning.
And it does seed the bacteria into the systemic circulation. But if you don't have a misshapen heart valve, you won't have a problem. Well, anyway, the cardiologists convened on this question, and it was around 1998 or something like that. They said, you know, all these years we've given antibiotics to everybody who has mitral valve prolapse.
Yeah.
We think it's unnecessary. However, there is such a thing as high-grade mitral valve prolapse where a cardiologist might say, you've got it and you have the kind where you really need to be careful during a dental procedure. Now, the other thing is that sometimes like a little thing like a tooth thing or some dental procedure, they'll say, well, take some antibiotics.
Yes.
If you have your wisdom teeth taken out, take some antibiotics.
Right.
Not really
like prophylactically.
Prophylactically.
It's almost, they're giving it to you prophylactically.
Gum surgery. Take some antibiotics.
Well, gum surgery.
Okay. Well, whatever.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, there are some situations where you need to take antibiotics because the mouth harbors bacteria. But they now think that dentists who prescribe 5% of the antibiotics prescribed in the United States may be responsible for creating more antibiotic resistance. The other thing is, I mean, and on the flip side, dentists also sometimes prescribe too much pain medication. They go, here, you know, you've had your tooth out. Here's a prescription for 30 Percocet. Well, you don't need 30 Percocet if you've had a tooth removed. You might need 5.
Yeah.
You know, 10.
Enough to get you through the next few days, and that's that.
So what ends up happening is the people say, oh, I took the Percocet. I felt so horrible. I can't. So leave it in the medicine cabinet. Then little kiddies get into it. Teenagers get into it. It goes to the streets. Or alternatively, people take it because, well, the dentist gave me 30. I've got to take 30. Like, by the time you've taken 30, you're hooked.
You're hooked. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know,
that's really
so something. But the ADA, the American Dental Association, is trying to do something about it. They're educating dentists that they have to be more circumspect about prescribing. And I think also the states are getting into it. The states are saying, hey, dentists, don't be so liberal prescribing these pain meds.
Right.
I mean, you know, I recognize the importance of dealing with pain, and we don't want to withhold pain meds from people who need them, but we don't want too much to get out there.
Right. It's so interesting what you said about your grandfather. Seemingly, he had probably lost most of his teeth in his 50s. I remember a periodontist telling a friend of mine that no teeth, no periodontal disease. That is the root of infection
of bacteria.
Which we know
is associated with stroke and cardiovascular disease. Yeah.
So maybe that's why he lived to a ripe old age, or maybe having the teeth extracted helped him to live a longer, healthy life.
Well, I'm going to have all my teeth
instead
taken
of getting
out.
There we go. Let's all get our teeth taken out. Get
Dr.
some Polident.
Has recommended.
Forget about holistic dentistry.
Longevity. Forget intermittent fasting. Forget exercise.
Just get your teeth out.
Take all your teeth out.
Yeah. That would be when we were kids. My grandfather would, you know, oh, you got a toothache? Come here. He'd tie a string around your tooth, tie the other end at the doorknob, and push the door closed, and out came the tooth. That didn't happen to me, but it happened to some of my cousins. And that was not fun, or maybe it was startling, or maybe it was funny. But
I'll top that story. My father had his appendix out when he was a kid.
Not via string and a doorknob.
No, but he said the doctor came to the house.
To the house?
Yeah, and they laid him out on the kitchen table, and they operated him on, they did the operation on the kitchen table. And the doctor had some ether or something like that he brought along with him, and they took out his appendix at home.
Wow.
Yep. And that was... And
you
that,
are kidding.
And he didn't come from a very impoverished, backward place.
What year was that?
He was born 1910 in Berlin.
Okay.
And so this is probably around the time of the First World War.
Wow.
And Germany had like the most advanced medical care because people from the United States would go to study in Germany. It was very prestigious to go to Heidelberg to study medicine. Mm-hmm. You know, if you came back from Heidelberg, they would say, oh, you're a god now. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, forget Harvard, Yale, you know, that's nothing by comparison. So anyway, so he did recount that.
That is really something. Whoa.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by True Niagen Pro. Cellular health is the foundation of wellness. True Niagen Pro helps cells stay resilient. True Niagen Pro is a unique form of vitamin B3, clinically proven to safely increase NAD, a vital resource used to help fuel and maintain the health of all living cells. But this critical cellular resource is not constant. It's been found to decline up to 50% as we age. When NAD levels are low, our cells have a harder time producing the energy they need to maintain our health as we age. Published research shows that increasing NAD boosts cellular energy production, supports healthy cellular metabolism, and promotes cellular repair. When surveyed, True Niagen users report improvements in energy levels and an enhanced sense of overall well-being. True Niagen Pro is backed by multiple published clinical studies and is only available through healthcare practitioners. You can get yours by going to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com for True Niagen Pro.
Okay, moving on. Moving on. Oh, here's a question from Nicole. Greetings, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm a 45-year-old female, 125 pounds, 5'8". Beautiful. No medications, no major surgeries, low-carb organic diet. I've been concerned about my platelet count. Seems to be dropping. Is there a concern for a person whose platelet count is dropping? Could it be caused by anything that I'm doing or taking? And she gives us a read of her platelets going from 141 in 2016 to 106 in 2018.
I won't go through recitation of all the supplements she's on.
Right,
because I will, you know, I saw it. And I will tell you that it's very, 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 very unlikely that a supplement caused this.
I agree. Looking at this,
I mean, I guess there's some possibility of some idiosyncratic reaction. I'm not going to completely rule that out. But drugs that lower platelets, I'm going to look up.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm using...
Yeah. She's not on any medications. She's in very good health. No major surgeries. Just a reminder, Dr. Hoffman, she's... 125 and 5'8".
Lasix that's super can modern. Cause this. So the condition is called thrombocytopenia. Lasix, NSAIDs, penicillin, a heart drug called quinine, which is used to be used for cramps. It's now not available for cramps. Ranitidine, which is Zantac. And sulfonamide drugs, which is like Bactrim, and. You know, so there's actually a list of medications that can cause this.
But I could think of another reason for platelet counts to be low, not necessarily in this fashion, food allergies.
Yeah, well, I think there was one medical article I read a long time ago about intolerance or allergy to sesame seeds that induce thrombocytopenia. It's unusual. You know, usually there's a medical condition associated with it. There is something called idiopathic thrombocytopenic purpura, which is an autoimmune disease.
ITP.
ITP. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so, but how low are platelets? You didn't say.
Well, in two readings in 2016, it went from 141 to 172, but then in 2018, from 129 to 106.
Okay, so we're beginning to cross the threshold of potential concern.
Yeah.
You don't really have thrombocytopenia until you drop, I mean, clinical thrombocytopenia where there's actual risk of bleeding. If you drop below 25,000 or so, you could start having abnormal bleeding. Hmm. But you can do fine with 70,000, 80,000 platelets. So there's a trend here, and it might be indicative of some hematological condition. So she needs to see a hematologist.
Ah, okay. Nicole, go see a hematologist.
And sometimes what they'll do, those are tests. Maybe they'll do a bone marrow biopsy to see if something's going on. It could be a sign of, you know, an emerging, condition.
Okay. Nicole also says, thank you for having a wonderful passion in health and helping people, and looking forward to seeing Dr. Hoffman's pics of scuba diving.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We did post some.
Right?
Scroll back
she
a little.
Sent this back, she sent this back old. In May.
Oh, good.
So
okay.
So they're already up. She's probably seen it. Okay. So we've got an email. This is from Tanner. Tanner's a med student. Good afternoon, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Big fan of the podcast. After some research into the function of beetroot juice or powder as a supplement to provide numerous benefits for cardiovascular, brain, endothelial, I found that nitrate must be reduced twice in order to get nitric oxide.
Correct.
I found that reduction rates can be increased by antioxidants such as vitamin C. Based on your knowledge and further research, do you think the reduction rates in vivo are sufficient enough to reduce nitrate to nitric oxide, in order to benefit exercise, or would you recommend adding vitamin C to the supplement list to help with the reduction?
Well, so the answer is that if you know, we know that nitrates have a vasodilating action because they produce nitric oxide.
Yeah.
Nitric oxide is the Viagra principle, and it actually helps blood vessels throughout the body.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, sildenafil, which is Viagra, was designed to be a heart drug.
Yeah.
It was designed to be something to promote heart circulation and lower blood pressure. But at the end of the initial trial, the men involved with that experiment said, so that was
Guess
interesting.
What?
That was interesting. Where can I get a hold of that stuff? They said, well, no, it's not available. We're just testing out this medication. But yeah, I kind of would like to get a hold of some of that stuff. Why are you so interested in that stuff? And then they discovered that it was one of those serendipitous things.
Right.
So anyway, so the conversion, you know, this is a very wonky, astute person, and knows that there's two reduction steps. And so the reduction steps are dependent on the environment in which the nitrates are absorbed.
Yes.
So if the environment is very
antioxidant rich, yeah,
or alternatively, too many free radicals, it will impair the activity of conversion to nitric oxide.
Yeah.
So that's why actually people who have a lot of free radicals, they don't have enough nitric oxide. So vitamin C and other antioxidants might be appropriate to establish the milieu in which the nitrates can be properly converted. The other step in the conversion, there's some conversion via the microbiome. And even the oral bacteria have something to do with that. So actually some studies that suggest that Listerine and antiseptic mouthwashes kind of kill off the beneficial bacteria that
because of the alcohol
the
in them. Yes.
Not just the alcohol, but also chlorhexidine
and all of that
heavy
stuff.
You know, really heavy duty kinds of disinfectants kill off the beneficial bacteria responsible for its conversion. So, so the answer is yeah. I mean, it's appropriate to use beets, but also to have a.
I would add vitamin C to anybody's regimen.
Sure, and you know, I think there's. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think beets also contain vitamin C.
Yes.
Yeah.
Probably.
So
not a whole
you all
lot,
get
but
that in that package.
Yeah.
Most fruits and vegetables have some content of vitamin C. So
some vitamin C.
It's
that's
kind of a
true.
Whole package.
Right. Eat some strawberries with that beet, red pepper, orange,
right.
Something like that. Absolutely. So, Tanner, best of luck to you.
Good luck in your medical career.
Yeah, good luck in your medical career. How wonderful.
And, you know,
thanks for writing to us.
Yeah, and when you're ready to attend some integrative medicine conferences, ping us and let us know and we'll point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take a little break now because we divide our podcast into two parts and give us a little preview of what we're going to tackle in part two.
My oncologist is recommending Arimidex. I've had a unilateral mastectomy.
Okay,
we'll what do you think? Yeah.
We'll tackle that. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions, and we'll be right back.